having to deal with that, but you do what you have to do. It's family, pues. His friend Dave had given him a nice little set of 3 moleskin notebooks and had told him to write his gratitude in them. Gratitude for what? That's up to you. I can't tell you what to be grateful for. This is silly. Dare to be silly. You take yourself too seriously anyway. Gratitude. Try it. Gratitude is prayer. You could always use more prayers. Liking mangoes and papayas is prayer? It all depends on you, Angel. Do you mean it? Will you miss it? Claro que sí. Well then, besides, what's wrong with doing something silly to make yourself happy? The notebooks had a title, My Silly Prayers. He kept one in his shirt pocket when he was wearing a shirt with a pocket, or he kept it tucked under his left buttock in bed or in his wheelchair. He terrorized his daughter with his demands for a steady stream of blue G2 pens. He refused to write with anything else. Those were the pens he had used at work, and those were the pens he used now. Mangos was the first entry, and then, Dave, you idiot, in case his friend ever saw it. Marriage. Family. Walking. Working. Books. Eating. Cilantro. That surprised him. He didn't know where it came from. Cilantro, he thought. Then, my baby brother. Every day he found his gratitudes more ridiculous, but they were many, and they reproduced like desert wildflowers after rain. He could not stop himself. His daughter had to buy him a second, then a third set of tiny notebooks. Wildflowers after rain. The heart breaks open, and little bright seeds fall out. Before that, he hadn't realized he was a poet among his many other attributes. He missed sex, even masturbating. All he could hold now was a soft tenderness that filled him with despair. He had been famous in his bedroom for volume, trajectory, and distance, and these things had faded until even the branch itself faltered and nothing could come from him again. Ay, chiquito, Perla cried when they made love. Eres tremendo. He remembered brown nipples. They floated through his days like strange shadows of delicious little birds that he could not touch, almost buttery against his tongue. His fingers and palms felt cinnamon bellies and backs, even as his hands lay at rest on his quilt. He tasted the sea inside his lover and her milk. He missed walking, missed his restless flirtation with Perla's sisters, though he felt repentant about that part, La Gloriosa especially. Good God, even now she could stop a truck with a flash of her leg. He hadn't felt a stirring in his palo for ages, but just thinking of La Gloriosa in a colorful dress and some dangerous heels made him remember the swell and pulse of the branch. For a moment he believed he had been cured and it would bloom. He shook his head ruefully. Walking, he told himself. Focus on the subject at hand. Strolling in the park. Walking to McDonald's, holding hands with Perla and perambulating along the playas de Tijuana, watching the Border Patrol helicopters just north of the rusting border wall, eating fish tacos in the stands by the seaside bullring, the ease and pump of his strong body, comfortable shoes. He utterly missed his unbroken body. Somehow Perla knew when he was thinking these things, especially when he thought about women. So he cleared his mind. He had been the first in the family to use computers, and he told himself now, reboot, reboot, cabrón, Control-Alt-Delete, absolutely, delete. Es muy sexy, mi ángel, Perla often announced when they were all gathered. It was hard to feel sexy, with all his bones turning to chalk, and his legs aching day and night, wearing a diaper. His brave daughter asked him often, Daddy, did you pee-pee yet? Jesus Christ. Sorry, Lord, but how did he get smaller than she was? Being taller than my kids. Big Angel had always been their leader. Since Don Antonio had abandoned them to starve in La Paz, his siblings had looked at him as their father figure. And now he was his own daughter's baby. Now she put baby powder on his nalgas. This felt like one of the corny jokes he loved to tell when they were all together. "You all right, Daddy?" she said. "I'll never be all right again." He stared for long stretches, and though she knew there was a lot going on inside him, she had no idea how much. Minerva. She hated that name. But her homegirls, right away, had changed it to Minnie, which became La Minnie Mouse. Made it easy to buy her Christmas presents. She had quite a collection, Minnies and Mickeys, plushies and plastic, hoodies and pillows. He gestured for two of the gathered peewees to come to him. Grandkids, he thought. Maybe great-grandkids. There are always a couple of them around. His children had all had children, and those children were having children. His nieces and nephews even had children. They crowded around his chair. "Yeah, pups!" "When I was in the hospital the last time," he said in his delightfully accented English, modeled on Ricardo Montalban, because the peewees could only say taco and tortilla in Spanish. He spoke English. "Do you know what happened?" "No, pops." "There was a guy. A very sick guy."
"Sicker than you, pops?"
"I see. So sick they had to cut off half of him."
"Gross!"
"Yeah. They cut off the guy's whole left side."
"What?
Like everything, pops?"
"Todo.
His left arm, his left leg, his left ear, his left nalga." The kids shouted. They valued random butt references. "But guess what?"
"What, pops?"
"He's all right now." They didn't get it. Here comes the rain again. 4 p.m. Hot showers. Driving. Berla pulling up her stockings. Eggs frying in hot lard. Tortillas, corn, not flour. Steve McQueen. Lalo came for him. "Nice and clean," Big Angel said. "Feeling fresh." He spoke English to his boy. He felt great. He tucked his little book under himself. He was going to beat this.
"I am alive."
"Right on." Lalo had changed out of his uniform. He wasn't going to admit to anyone that it was too tight. And he knew he looked fine in his best suit. His only suit. Big Angel had taken him to the mall and found him a dark blue two-piece with a thin chalk pinstripe, white shirt with a maroon tie, black wingtips. Minnie had gone ahead with Berla and Little Angel, who had waited for them in the parking lot. One more day, Big Angel thought, as Lalo wheeled him across the tarmac and onto the cemetery grass. One more day to go. Till the pachanga. "Careful, son."
"Gotcha, pops."
"Don't dump me out."
"That'd be funny, though."
"Have you no respect?"
"Nothing but respect for the OG.
OG, does that mean old geezer?"
"Funny, pops."
"I know.
Hurry."
The hell was Pops in such a hurry for? Lalo thought the old man needed a major chill pill, like soon. Dude, what's the rush? If Lalo was heading for the grave, he'd drag his feet, fire up a few blunts, kick back, ease into it. Well, that's what he was doing now, because where else was everybody going? Freaking hole in the dirt. Make it muy suave, homie. Ain't no race, so slow your pace. His left forearm itched like a bitch. His newest tat, an image of his dad in better days with that old-school Mexican mustache. It said, "Pops, forever." Cost him $260 in San Isidro. He wanted to scratch it, but he didn't want it to bleed into his new threads. Lalo was the last of the boys. Life had taken the others. One was here, close to where Grandma was going to rest.
made him feel weepy. Damn, Braulio, he thought. The blood stayed on the sidewalk for days, turned brown. It was like some dead lake. He and his homies stood beside it, staring, crying, vowing payback. Flies got at it when it turned to pudding in the sun. How come nobody thought to rinse it off? Flies. Man, he hated flies. Iraq was full of goddamn flies. There, blood got into the dirt, though. Puddles didn't last long. Soaked through the dust and gravel, you could see it, like some shadow. But what you could really do was smell it. He shook his head. After the pudding dried, wasps came and tweaked out all over it, shaking and nibbling bits of crust off the edges of the stain. Braulio. It all blended with combat in his mind. His leg scar was burning. He wondered if his own blood was still in the dirt back there, or if some dog had dug it up and licked it clean. And his other brother, his big brother, had gone away and didn't care to come back for a visit. Indio. Yeah. Okay, you're los, culero. He pushed his dad along. I'm the good son, Pops, he said. Big Angel reached his hand as far over his head as he could, and Lalo gave him a soft five, sliding his fingers off his dad's. Thank you, mijo, Pops said. Big Angel was negotiating with God. Give me one more birthday, and I'll make it good. Nobody's ever going to forget the day. They'll be thinking about you forever, God. All those miracles you do, right? Like me. Like giving me one more day. You got this, God. You can do this. His mind burned with random glory. Sunsets over La Paz. The shadows in a ruined Mexican cathedral after the workers had shoveled out the dead pigeons and dung. The infinity of folded shadows between his wife's thighs. The whale he saw in the Sea of Cortez rising from the water and hanging there in shattered glass skirts of seawater as if the air itself held its impossible bulk aloft, and flying fish as tiny and white as parakeets passing under its arched belly and vanishing in foam. He looked up. It was still raining. Berla hated rain. But Big Angel knew a signal when he saw it. New life coming. Life carries on. He arched one of those brows at the Lord. Ahead, Little Angel held an umbrella over Perla. She leaned on him as they walked across the wet grass. He didn't fool Big Angel. He knew his baby brother had always been attracted to his wife. Who wasn't? He wondered if on one of those party nights, when the tequila was flowing. But no, no way. Why get suspicious now? Perla and Little Angel veered to the side, aiming he knew for Braulio's grave, but she never made it there. As he expected, she started to collapse. In 10 years, she had never made it all the way across that lawn. Little Angel held her up and semi-dragged her toward the correct burial. Her wails were small across the space and muffled. It disturbed him, as if he were having some terrible dream. He turned his head, took in the vista, tombs, statues, trees, rain, then looked back at his wife and baby brother. She had shrunk too, just like Big Angel had, all short now. Poor Flaca. In her black dress and shawl, her skin was still beautifully brown, though. Too brown for the taste of his own mother. Mama America had preferred paler hues, but he and Perla had earned their splotches and scars and moles and wrinkles. Her legs were veiny and bowed, but he knew damn well Little Angel had admired those legs when Perla was in her prime. So had his other brother. So had his father, but she had remained his, and he admired her exactly as she was. She'd had to teach him where to put his tongue when they were young, but once he knew, he never missed. "I win," he said. The only other umbrella they could find in the house during their mad scramble to the funeral was a silly child's parasol. Big Angel popped it open. He tried to ignore the picture he must make as he squinted out from under the pink Hello Kitty. There was just a bit of mistiness in the air, really, evanescent and funeral appropriate. Big Angel looked a little harder through the mist, and there he was, the old man, Don Antonio's ghost, looking dapper. It was lounging behind the tree, waiting for Mama America to get done with this gala so they could go dancing on Saturn. Big Angel nodded at his father. His father grinned and moved back behind the tree with his finger over his lips. "Lalo," Big Angel said, turning back to his son, "death is not the end." "Yeah? Huh. I'll study up on that. Looks pretty final to me, Pops." Usually Lalo spent the day in gym shorts and an old Van Halen tee, but there were times like today when the world needed to remember what kind of man he was. Big day demanded big props, and he liked good clothes to demonstrate those props. "Props to Pops," he said to himself. But this, there ain't no death bullshit? Yeah, no. Death sure was the end for his brother. Death sure was the big mother effer that took out half his boys in that Allahu Akbar alley. Death sure as shit should have taken him instead of them and one of his balls. Just unzipped his leg, used his ball sack like a zipper pull, and opened it on up from thigh to knee, around the knee and into his boot, just to get a look. Like steak inside there. Indio called him One Ball when he got home. Lalo didn't know why that was so funny, but he'd laughed so hard he cried, telling his brother, "That ain't funny, asshole." Death. Took him two hands to count the homies he'd lost right here in town. At McDonald's, at the park, under the off-ramp to 805. And that cop Braulio and Joker had beaten down with chains? That dude wasn't getting up again. He wasn't gonna dance no more if he ever woke up. That right there was for real. Yeah, not a peep from any one of them. None of them players ever came back. That mystical Pops Brujo stuff was just some cosmic old Mexican bullshit. Death not the end. Maybe so if you counted nightmares. There were lots of chatty dead dudes in nightmares. Pops knew things, sure, but he hadn't seen no brains on the sidewalk. Like all vatos, Hungry Man was a philosopher. Damn, his leg ached. He was hoping to get a little taste of something to ease it. And Big Angel was thinking, these children are so stupid they think they are the first to discover the world. Lalo knew he was a sharp-dressed man in that new pinstripe suit. He was taking the raindrop hits on his semi-shaved head like a boss. It was bare to the elements since he'd taken off his beret. He imagined his face looked carved from dark wood, all Chichimeca warrior, cabrones, firme. His stash drooped a little, and the soul patch under his lower lip looked bandido as hell. His black shades revealed nothing, though he was always glancing back and forth, watching for knuckleheads from La Mara or El Hoyo Maravilla. Them gangbangers was always looking for trouble. You couldn't be from the wrong neighborhood. He was furthermore engaged in watching for the damn border patrol and government drones peeping the brown man. Count on that. Migra. For some reason, his TJ homies called the border patrol the Little Star of the Sea. WTF, Lalo wanted to know. But he couldn't go back to TJ to ask nobody. Not right now. The border patrol had been sneaky lately. He heard peeps talking about BP agents staking out PTA meetings and grabbing brown parents on their way out. Later with that. He wasn't about to have some migra MFers grab a tío or tía. Not today. Or himself, for that matter. No cops, which he called chota, or placa in the language his father did not understand. Braulio and Indio had taught him, though Indio was scarier than the other boys, so tall, so dark, and man, those muscles. He wasn't really what he seemed. That boy was the best of all of them. Braulio had them fooled. He was hilarious. He could pour honey on moms and pops. Nobody had any idea but Minnie. Wasn't Indio who ever got arrested. It was Lalo. He'd already been in jail a couple of times. It was bad the last time. Feds and everything. But the worst part was making Pops look bad. Pops had warned him over and over if he kept getting in trouble, not only would it make the family look bad, but the cops would figure out he was illegal and kick his ass out of the USA. Don't worry, Pops, I'm a wounded veteran. Yeah. And he had never asked them to carry him as a baby across the Tijuana River, but there it was. Lalo, just born in 1975, and Pops decided it was time to drag them across the border to San Diego, where he'd been hiding out and working, illegal as hell, camping out at Grandpa's house, building a better life for them, as he liked to say on weekends when he came creeping back to Mexico. Lalo was feeling sorry for himself. Dude grows up in Dago, thinks he's a viva la raza American vato, and finds out all of a sudden he has to hide from the border patrol. Ain't that the shits? Why is it always me? He said. What? Big Angel replied. Lalo was glad he'd said something because the way Pops was slumped in his chair, Lalo was starting to think he was asleep. Or dead. Better not be dead, Pops. Not on my watch. Lalo forced himself to look across the wet grass at Braulio's stone. So painful. It was all he could do at the moment. Hey, bro, he whispered. It would have to be enough. It was Braulio who thought he'd figured out the immigration thing. Minnie didn't have to worry about it. What a gringa. Homegirl was all borned up in National City like a real American. She didn't have to deal with these things. She could vote. Maybe Braulio had even wanted to be good. Do good. Who knows? Get some meaning into his life along with his papers. Lalo had learned anything was possible. Braulio, when he got kicked out of school for fighting, had stayed away from the house more and more to avoid Big Angel and Perla's disappointment until 1991, when he was 20 years old. On one of those prowling days, he ran into some army recruiters. They had a small booth at the mall, like those earnest characters who hawked Magic Vision 3D posters and small plastic helicopters that zoomed around like alarming insects. Braulio liked to take Lalo to the mall with him, cruise the chicks, hit up the cookies at Mrs. Fields. They usually mall crawled with Joker, Braulio's junior gangsta home slice. But this day, they were flying solo, just the two of them. Braulio was looking for some skinny jeans, and Joker, being a traditional vato, didn't go for that emo shit. He would have mocked Braulio all day long for going all gabacho, trying to look like some white boy. So they had just exited the gap, with security keeping a cyborg sharp eye on them. They were snickering and trying to say dashing things to the Filipina girlies in their tiny shorts. Damn was about the best they could come up with. But what mattered was how you said it. Damn! Like it was made out of caramel, would stick to their lips. Damn, girl! With a little corner of the mouth and a slight shake of the head. For reals. Maybe a hand briefly upon the dick. Poor Lalo. He thought this was slick business. Then Braulio saw the tank. The army booth had a plastic M14 mounted to the back wall and a tank on its 7-foot-tall poster rampant in mid-launch off some distant and foreign sand dune. A young blonde soldier was greatly in evidence in the foreground of this action shot, lit up like the pet of the month. He was giving the world a giddy thumbs up. The blocky-headed sarge at the desk had a pen made out of a .50 caliber bullet. His teeth were as brilliant as white plastic. There was a small crowd of boys milling around the booth. From behind these boys, Braulio and Laura heard such utterances of awe as the following popped from the boy's lips. Dude, firme vato, and for Hodad's, too lax to say bro, brah. Drawn in as if by a tractor beam, Braulio rolled right out of the 80s and into some tech future of metal and engines. Lalo felt his brother slip out of the family in the 50 steps it took to be drawn into the U.S. Army. He never understood the alchemy of that transition. By the time Lalo caught up to him, that walk for him was a mile. Braulio had pushed through the bros and football players and was sitting at the desk, already spooling his line of Barrio bullshit to the sarge.
Like, I ain't gonna lie, sir.
Don't call me sir, I work for a living. Braulio didn't know it was a cliche, and he found it profoundly badass.
I got some beefs, he said.
By beef, I don't assume you mean prime rib.
Ha, 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 ha!
He very precisely broadcast.
By beef, I'm gonna assume you're telling me you have some gang-related issues. What with you being Hispanics and all. Ha, 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 ha!
Look it! He aimed his bullet pen at Braulio's skinny face. Best boys I ever served with are goddamn taco benders, son. No offense.
Well, I got some imig... Say no more.
A massive palm formed a miniature border fence at Braulio's face.
Don't even say the word. I don't give a shit if you're wet or dry, if you get my meaning.
Wet or dry don't matter shit to me, and it don't matter to Uncle Sam.
For reals?
Lalo watched the sarge grimace. He wasn't deeply into Vato English, apparently.
If you're willing to fight for your nation, Sarge lied, your nation is ready to fight for you. No greater gift in all that. Fighting for the USA, son. You join up, we handle your papers. Hell, when you muster out, bingo, you're American. Automatico.
Braulio looked up at Lalo with real emotion on his face.
Least we can do, Sarge said, and shook Braulio's hand.
Braulio put in 2 years, most of it in Germany, never saw combat, and came back with heroin in his veins.
Papers. Right. That was some major BS right there.
But Lalo didn't know it, and Braulio didn't live long enough to find out. Lots of homeboys fell for it, and later they were all squatting in veteran bunkers in Tijuana, wondering how they got kicked out of the country. Lalo remembered the sarge when he got in trouble years later. It wasn't no thing, just some minor gang-related shenanigans. But he wanted to stop it before things got any worse. At 26, he felt too old to be a soldier, but the government was desperate and they were taking almost anybody. He knew, too, that a dude almost 30 would face much more trouble for petty crimes than a stupid kid. A little weed, a knife in the pocket, a street fight. He wanted to be as good as Pops. He could never be that. But he could at least be as good as his bro. The army would make him a man, something he seemed to be struggling to do for himself. So he went looking for the booth. He didn't think there'd actually be a war in some place he'd never even heard of. And he didn't expect to get blown up on his first tour in that alley smelling of burned meat. But once Pops came for him at the VA, he was walking with a cane for a while. He felt large and in charge. He was a citizen. They told him his military ID was all he needed. They were right, he believed, until he really stepped in it, was suddenly in serious trouble, and found out he'd been lied to. The recruiters, the army, everybody had said what they needed to say to get one more body on the firing line. Even though he considered himself an American now, he still went down to Tijuana to hang with some of his friends. In 2012, he was all bold, talking himself up to his Tijuana boys. There was a dude in Colonia Independencia who wanted to get to San Diego. He had a promise of work at the Del Mar racetrack, hot walking the race horses. He said he'd cut Lalo in, get him some cabbage if he helped him. Maybe a full-time job, depending on what the boss said. Firme. Lalo was down with that. He became an instant expert in schooling the undocumented immigrant. You're a Chicano from Barrio Logan, he instructed his pupil. None of that Mexican shit. Just say that, homie. Let me do the talking. He gave the kid a Padres cap and a pair of Varney surfer shades. When they ask you where you were born, say Detroit, Michigan. Por qué? It's like American, way. Like real far from TJ. Orale, I got it. Say it. Chicano, Logan, Detroit, Michigan. I got it. USA all the way. Say Detroit, man. Like that. Sound American. Detroit, man. Not Mang, man. Mang. Forget it. Stick to St. Chicano and Detroit, aight? Aight. I got the rest. I'm American as hell. In those ancient days, they didn't need passports to return to the U.S. Lalo drove his 67 Impala convertible, dropped to floor level, low and slow, in custom candy apple blue with white trim. He still owed Big Angel for that. He would get a job, he told himself, any day now. He chose the longest line of cars, figuring the border agent would be tired and easy to get by. He had his Raiders cap on his head, his Mountain Dew in his lap, and the radio, tuned to oldies, had a little American flag on his antenna. When they pulled up to the booth, the guy turned out to be a woman, and she was giving Lalo the gas face before he even smiled at her. Citizenship, she said. U.S., ma'am. Flashed his army ID. Purple heart. Uh-huh. She curled one lip to warn him to mind his P's and Q's. What was your business in Mexico? Tacos el paisano. And you know, shopping. She leaned down and stared at his homie, sucked her teeth. You, sir? Citizenship? Chicano, man. I see. USA, all the way. She nodded and fingered her radio. Lalo was getting nervous. We good, he said, smiling like Pops to disarm her. Sir, she said to his homie, where were you born? Detroit, he said. She nodded and withdrew. Lalo was about to drop it into gear and book out of there when the menso beside him decided to add to it. Detroit, he called, Michoacan. Dang. They were accompanied to the secondary inspection area and cuffed forthwith. He didn't see Moms and Pops until his trial for alien smuggling. He was as surprised as everyone else to find that, well, he was not actually a U.S. citizen. In spite of his best efforts, he brought more shame to the family when he was summarily deported. And now he was living in his father's garage, after creeping and running across a Tijuana river in the dark like some friggin' wetback. Things were okay in TJ, but he needed to get back to take care of Pops. As soon as Indio came down to tell him Big Angel was sick, Lalo headed north, getting it together, saving little money. He had, like, kids now, shit to take care of. Couldn't take another fall. Chale, he said out loud. What? Said Big Angel. Nothing, Pops. Are you talking like a gangster again? I was saying no way. That's chale. It's like no. No to what? To death. Then why don't you speak Spanish? Why don't you say no, like a human being? Don't be no racist now. A Mexican can't be racist to a Mexican. I don't know about that. Lalo was looking around to see if his kids were there. I'm a Chicano. I'm talking Chicano. Didn't I tell you that the word Chicano came from chicanery? Bullshit, Lalo thought. Here we are, Pops, he said, parking his father. Freaking culture clash up in here. Lalo smiled as they beheld the tent top erected to keep rain off the mourners. The rule was that everybody see Big Angel was the captain and his soldiers were hopping too. Why the hell not? Life was good. He was proud to wheel his father across the lawn. The ego has landed, he said. He hit the little brake lever with his foot so Pops wouldn't roll around. Big Angel craned around and looked at his son's nice slacks, his jacket. It was too bad about the tattoos. That damn Cholo Cross thing on his hand. He had thought this about his son's new suit. I want the boy to look good at my funeral. I want Lalo to look at the pictures and feel proud that he was dressed to the nines. Know he dressed like a Mexicano, not a vato, and know that his old man picked that suit out, and the old man had set the dress code for his own burial, and he will feel awe. That was all Big Angel ever wanted, to inspire awe. The grave was a small open shaft among flat headstones laid out like a mosaic in the lawn. Big Angel's siblings gathered, along with those others who had stuck around to pay their respects to the familia, Mary Lou, Cesar, Little Angel. Various feuds and internecine scandals were held in abeyance for the day. It kept them busy otherwise, shaking their heads over one another's minor atrocities, gathering in clandestine kitchen meetings to scissor their victims in absentia. Their victims were as tattered as abused coats when they were done. Allegiances shifted like the seasons, rhetorical weapons, ever at the ready. Minerva was standing over her brother's stone, wiping the rain and the leaves off it, as if she could protect him now. In emerald light, beneath the melancholy leaves of the maple, her hair gleamed with a thousand small diamonds of rain. Little Angel stood next to her and bent his head. Minnie, he said, my big bro, tío. The stone said, Braulio de la Cruz, 1971 to 2006. It's almost 10 years, tío. She sniffled. He handed her Marilu's Kleenex from the funeral. I come over here sometimes to talk to him. He was such a brat. She wiped her nose. I used to eat standing up, right? Breakfast, when I was still going to school, he'd sneak in and scream in my ear and make me throw Cheerios all over the kitchen. She laughed. Fool, she told the stone. Sorry I wasn't here, Little Angel said. I'm glad you weren't here. It was bad. She looked around. You don't need this stuff. It's better you have your own world far away from here. She thought for a moment. Sorry I drunk texted you. He patted her back, made me feel special. Little Angel had been terrified of Braulio. The kid had been skinny, but muscled like Bruce Lee. Sometimes he'd had a look like a Doberman, trembling before it attacked. Is it nice there where you live? Minnie asked. It's beautiful, yeah, he said. And Bigfoot lives there. You crack me up, Dio. She hugged him with one arm. I hate this town sometimes. Come to Seattle. Nah, this is home. I belong here. They turned away. Who's gonna run things if I go? She said. There is that. Tell you what, though, she said. I wish my big bro was here. The biggest bro. He and Daddy don't like each other right now. Little Angel looked at her. Indio, she said. He made lifestyle choices. I see. But he didn't, not really. Little Angel forgave himself for not remembering the details, if he'd ever heard them. He didn't want to hear them. But apparently Minnie wasn't done with him. She produced her cell phone. Check out his Facebook, tío, she said. She opened the profile page. The photo was a picture of Marilyn Manson from a few years back, in his full cross-dressing outfit with a pair of rubber breasts. The name listed was Indio Geronimo. Not sure how to respond, Angel said. Wow. Right, said Minnie, but read what it says. Non-cisgendered, not heteronormative cultural liberation warrior. That's my bro. Minnie, I'm not even sure what all that means, but I can see why your father can't deal with it. You think Dad has problems with it? You should ask my mom. She acts like he's dead to her. She makes believe she doesn't even miss him. Then we sneak out to eat pancakes with him so Daddy don't know. He tried to come up with avuncular wisdom and ended up making a whee sound.
then cleared his throat. Frankly, little Angel had barely registered Indio's presence. Neither of those two boys had seemed like real family to him. And when Indio drifted in and out of the mix over the years, little Angel had barely noticed. Bad uncle, he thought. He watched Minnie walk over to her man and take his arm, but he didn't remember if they were married or not. Little Angel went to the back of the crowd and assumed his position. El Indio, he thought. Some kind of actor. Or model. Hair to his ass. That much little Angel remembered. He had given the kid Bowie records. Big Angel and Perla hadn't liked that. He suddenly wondered if he had been a catalyst for this sexual revolution. And if he had been, was it a good thing or a bad thing? A family inheritance, he thought. Endless drama. This was why he lived in Seattle. Family. It was all too complicated. Big Angel whispered to his mother, "Forgive me if I have no tears to spare for you, mother. I am down to my last ones. I know you understand. Rain." Most mourners were jammed under the tent. They pressed forward to lay a hand on the blue vase of ashes, sitting on a small folding platform. Beautiful wreaths surrounded the open hole. More were coming. Husbands of the various ladies trudged along carrying the flowers from the Bavarian chapel. A UPS man hauled out wreaths delivered from Mexico. No priest, though. There was a small blue tarp over the raw dirt pile. La Minnie came to it, wiping away tears. She was as beautiful as the angels had ever seen her. Her dude stood awkwardly behind her, hands clasped in front of his zipper as if he needed to pee. Little Angel saw it, even if they didn't. She was the new backbone of the family. She was wearing a black and blue outfit, and her hair was a cascade of curls and waves, and her nails were two-toned. She was saying, "Dios te bendiga, Grandma," to the urn. Her guy stared at her like he'd been hit with a chair in a wrestling match. The look of love. Big Angel watched. He couldn't remember the guy's name. What the hell? He'd known that guy for years. Then he realized he couldn't remember the name of the guy on TV either. That black guy on the nightly news with the glasses. And he couldn't remember the name of Perla's sister Lupita's pinche Americano husband in the fuchsia shirt. Christ! Sorry, Lord. He cast about, surveilling the crowd. The girls had mostly come in high heels. They were sinking into the mud, picking up fallen leaves with their heels like groundskeepers in parks with spike sticks. Lupita unwittingly displayed three leaves mounted at fetching angles upon her left shoe. He noticed some of the women were standing on the flat headstones to keep from sinking into the lawn. He shook his head. He imagined dead men lying beneath them, looking up their skirts. La Gloriosa stood far back under her own umbrella, in reasonable flats and a black Burberry overcoat. Huge French sunglasses, slightly angry, weeping softly. She wept for them all, wept for herself. There was a grave about 100 yards from this family plot that she dared not visit. She didn't even look in that direction. Yes, Braulio was a great tragedy, but he wasn't the only one to die that night. She turned her back to that other grave, then withstood the full assault of guilt and shame at her cowardice. She watched Little Angel. She had always thought he was a pretty boy. Mexican women, she reminded herself, women of a certain age, could not resist blue eyes. She curled her lip. Estúpida, she thought. It was only her broken heart wanting what it didn't need. He was flirting with her, she thought. Todavía lo tienes, she told herself. She tugged the coat tighter. Old curves, maybe, but still curves. Whenever she glanced at him, she caught his eyes turning away, like she'd interrupted his staring. What a child!
Any real man would lock eyes with her and make her blush, and once she'd blushed, he'd come stand beside her. She wanted him to claim her just for the afternoon, not leave her out here alone and wet like some bedraggled puppy. There was a time when they all would have been at her feet. She could have kicked each one away. The least he could do now was to offer her his arm and accompany her. She shook out her hair, in case he looked again. Middle brother Julio Cesar and his gin of a wife, Paz, stood beside Sister Marilu, Cesar standing guard between the warring women, a one-man DMZ. His siblings never stopped calling him Donald Duck. It was an old joke. He couldn't help the sound of his voice. It was a toss-up whether the women could make it through the burial ceremony without fighting. Whenever Paz leaned over to cast a poisonous glance at Cesar's big sister, Cesar gallantly moved forward and blocked the eye punch with his chin. His exquisite second wife stood apart with his sons and didn't look at him. The first wife, on a ranch somewhere in Durango. Big Angel saw all this, and he saw his brother's thoughts etched on his face. What the hell was I thinking? Too bad for you, Big Angel thought. I stayed with my flaca the whole time. He held his chin up. He had already bought a double plot not far from Mamas, on the other side of the little maple tree shading her, beside Braulio. He and Perla would lie together, so no peeking up skirts for him. Flaquito y flaquita, the stone would say, with their names and dates beneath. Perla intended, however, to lie about her birth date when they did her stone. They would spend forever side by side, and the rest of his fallen children would one day slumber around them all, a constellation of extinguished stars. Lalo stepped over to Little Angel. "Sup, tío?" he whispered. "Doing my duty." "I hear that." "She was good to me. Your grandma used to tell me I am your mother number two." Lalo did a little snagglepuss laugh from the side of his mouth, tiny ratchets of appreciation. "Skitch, skitch, skitch. I didn't ever meet your mom, did I?" "No. She white? As can be." "So you all right?" "Yeah, tío. Large and in charge. That's what I'm talking about." Little Angel enthused with imagined barrio brio. "Yo, tío, where's your wife at?"
"Gone."
"Like, gone, gone, or dead?"
"Gone. Her and all my furniture."
"Dang, she white?"
"Yes."
"Son," said Lalo, "go brown next time. Don't be no race traitor." "Skitch, skitch, skitch. Down and brown." Lalo nudged him with his elbow.
"Orale," Little Angel said. For what else could he say?
Lalo laughed softly and knocked knuckles with him. He pulled up his sleeve and showed him the pop's tattoo. Little Angel nodded sagely. "I should get one of those," he said.
"Yours will say bro."
They watched the sad crowd. "This family," Little Angel noted, "sure does talk a lot. I can't keep track of what they're saying or who they are." He showed Lalo his notebook, which greatly amused his nephew.
"Talk." "Yeah," he finally said to his uncle. "Talk's all we got."
With that, Lalo went back to his bodyguard position, behind the wheelchair. There came a little bustle. The crowd parted and poor Uki Contreras stumbled out. He still played with Barbie dolls, some of them naked and some beheaded. Uki was in a huge suit jacket somebody had given him, a brown fedora from some ancient tío cocked against the rain. He could have been 13, and he could have been 70. His eyes were crossed, little scraggly pubic chin beard. They called him Uki because he could never say cookie, and that homie loved a cookie. But he was infamous in the neighborhood for creeping into people's houses looking for Legos to steal.
Ookie loved Legos more than he loved Oreos or headless Barbies. He stepped up to the urn. "Grandma," he said, "you be the greatest grandma anybody ever seen." He looked around in the crowd. "Right?" he said. "Right," homie shouted. "Did I do good?"
"Good job, Ookie," Big Angel called. "We are proud of you, mijo."
Inspired, Ookie took off his hat.
"Big Angel," he cried. "You the best Big Angel I ever seen. Sorry you gotta die."
Stunned silence, a cough.
"We all have to die, Ookie," Big Angel said, "but not today."
Ookie smiled.
"Was she my grandma?" he said.
"No, Ookie," said Lamini.
"Am I your cousin?"
"Neighbors, Ookie." Ookie pumped his fist one time, then remembered to wipe a pretend tear from his face before he wandered off.
"Foxy lady," he said. "Purple haze."
Little Angel allowed himself to breathe. Another disaster averted. Family was too much responsibility. That 1,000-mile buffer zone was the only thing that worked. An actual grandson urged his 14-year-old daughter forward, and she played a song on her violin. The Vida Loca faction could not believe a homegirl played violin. They approved. That was badass right there. Her dad had pushed her into it because he wanted her to join a mariachi group, but she wanted to play classical and had managed to get into her school's orchestra. Debussy gave her tingles, not Selena. The vatos would kill for her. It was the college kids, all ironic and hipster, who snickered at every sour note. "Beautiful, mija," Minnie called. They clapped. A group of men from the family stepped up and sang a tremulous ballad that made everybody choke up. They all had to look away. They all stared at the rain. They held one another's hands.
"Shit's grim," noted Lalo, who did not enjoy crying.
Big Angel looked behind him, trying to find his baby brother. Lots of the youngsters were in the new American pose, heads bowed, hands at mid-chest, looking like monks at prayer, texting their asses off on their smartphones. They snuck selfies and posted them to their social media. "Me and my abuela's funeral." People with names like La Huera and Viejo Bear were saying things like, "So fucking sorry, mija," sad face emoji. Big Angel found Little Angel. He was also texting. 4:48 p.m. Back at the house. How could you end a whole era and bury a century of life and be home before supper time? Big Angel could not reconcile himself to this dirty deal they had all been dealt. Death. What a ridiculous practical joke. Every old person gets the punchline that the kids are too blind to see. All the striving, lusting, dreaming, suffering, working, hoping, yearning, mourning, suddenly revealed itself to be an accelerating countdown to nightfall. When you had 70 years ahead of you, nothing mattered, though you thought it all mattered greatly, but you didn't really feel the pressing need to do anything about it. Suddenly, though, there comes a birthday when you think, I have 20 years at best. And those years slide into the dark until you think, I have 15. I have 10. I have 5. And your wife tells you, live, don't fret, you could be hit by a bus tomorrow. Nobody knows when the end comes. But you know, she lies in the dark beside you, counting the years she has left, even if she won't admit it, wondering if every twinge in her left shoulder is the final heart attack, and then you find that you have no years left. You have days. That is the prize, to realize at the end that every minute was worth fighting for, with every ounce of blood and fire, and the majority of them poured down the toilet, unheeded. He had seen only 69 Christmas mornings. God damn it. Sorry, Lord. Not enough.
not nearly enough. So you fill your hours with hubbub like now. The house seemed to be bulging elastically like an old cartoon, music and dust flying out through the gaping junctures of the bouncing, jiving walls. Big Angel surveyed his domain. The kids had paid for a tent of their own. A wedding reception company was spreading a white vinyl roof over Big Angel's porch and part of his backyard on tall aluminum legs. They were setting up long folding tables, folding chairs. In the open, far back, a small stage with amps for various testimonials or impromptu song recitals under blue plastic tarps. Cars were jammed all down the block, but there were always families gathering in the hood. So it was hard to tell who was there for Big Angel's house and who was hanging down the block watching NFL highlights or having a tamale fest. The minivan was parked half in the driveway. They'd wheeled Big Angel in through the garage. Lalo didn't like it, because when they hit the remote, the whole front wall of his bedroom rose and exposed his bed and personal stuff to the street. There were usually a couple of trucks in the driveway, so nobody really saw his small empire, but his Chargers posters fell down. It was a classic Southern California ranch-style house, built in 1958, in a Mexican neighborhood south of San Diego, between National City and Chula Vista, Lomas Doradas. It used to be a sailor's neighborhood, old Anglo-Swabs from various wars, and dock workers from the National City boatyards, Basque tuna fishermen. Gradually, Filipinos moved in, and they gave way to the Raza. All the houses had bars on the windows, which scared outsiders, but which nobody from there even saw. None of the grannies on the street wanted some imagined pachuco to break in and steal their Franklin Mint collector plates. John Wayne and angels defending little blonde kids with flaming swords hung on kitchen walls all down the street. Palm trees, beige walls with bits of brick trim, asphalt and gravel shingles on the roof. Each house, 1,250 square feet. Five models, each turned at a different angle on its slab for variety. Lantana and geraniums, depressed birds of paradise, cacti. A Joshua tree leaned forward in front of Big Angel's in a small circle of stones on a slim lawn. All the houses had four bedrooms and a living room, two bathrooms and a nice kitchen dining area by the sliding door to the quarter-acre backyard. And myriad garage kingdoms developed as unemployed children came home to Mama. America, pues. At Big Angel's, a concrete patio faced the backyard, which swooped up a bank taller than the house. Drought-slaughtered ivy and patches of pickleweed and one psychotic nopal cactus that was well on its way to growing into some prehistoric tree. If you went up there above the cactus, you could look south and watch the lights on the Tijuana radio towers blink. In the dark, even Tijuana looked like a scatter of diamonds. Big Angel had paid for it all. There was a second building back there, the size and shape of another one-car garage. It was known as Big Angel's Workshop, but nobody had messed with it for years. It had a padlock on the door. They had occasionally raised chickens in the backyard, and the back wall of the workshop was the wall of the coop, where they had mounted the sleeping and laying boxes with their straw nests, fresh eggs every day. And Perla was happy to behead chickens for her pot without blinking, until the neighbors complained, and the city came along and removed the coops. Lalo called the neighbors chicken snitches. Perla sat at a table on the patio and rubbed her aching knees. Her small flock of doggies was scuttling around like animated empanadas on meth. Ay, que perritos, she said. They were chiweenies, chihuahua wiener dog mixes. La Mini called them naked mole rats since she took her kids to the zoo often and knew these things. Minnie had even been to the art museum. Perla watched the dogs occasionally leave the earth and pogo around the legs of the workers.
She was not going to think about that cemetery for the rest of the weekend. "Mija," she called to dear Minnie. "Minerva,